Grace to you, and welcome to the Deeper Daily Podcast for the 6th of May. I'm your host, Paul White, continuing verse by verse through the book of Galatians. What an amazing journey we are on. We're in Galatians chapter 5 today, closing the 4th verse, where Paul says, "You have become estranged from Christ. You who attempt to be justified by law, you have fallen from grace." And we saved that, "You have fallen from grace," for today, because I think it deserves its own portion. Let's talk about the way this verse is perceived by a majority of people who perhaps never read it. And what I mean by that is, what is this popular consumer approach to fallen from grace? Well, if you have lived long enough, you've seen scandal rock the church. I remember the scandals of the televangelism ministries of the 80s. That was a really big thing in the late 80s, was this exposure of all of these TV ministers. Some of it was for embezzlement or misuse of funds. Some of them were adulterous affairs and sexual deviancy. And we've had a few others pop up, I guess, over the last several decades that rocked the church world. I don't know that any rocked it quite as big as those in the 80s, and I think it's because we were still in that cable TV, MTV culture where things were big and bright and new and loud, and TV ministry was one of those things. Now it's sort of like a common thing, and there were almost rock stars in ministry, and then they got brought down, and I think some of the reasons why their fall was so big was because their voice was so loud against everything going on. And when they fell, strangely, many of them fell in the same areas that they had been fighting so hard against. There's probably a spiritual lesson for us there. But I remember both then and then in the previous decade or the decades since, when people would have these major public ministry failures, you would see the headlines on the news or on the front of magazines that would have the face of the preacher, and then it would say, "Fallen from grace." And that term was taken to mean failure. This guy messed up. He was in grace, and by in grace, meaning he was this fantastic, flamboyant figure who seemed to have God's hand on him. Now he's a broken shell of a man who isn't where he used to be, thus the phrase fallen. Where do they get the idea of fallen from grace? Well, they got it from Galatians 5:4, where Paul uses the phrase. But the popular understanding of that could not be further from what Paul means when he says fallen from grace. In Paul's context, he's talking to people, Gentiles, who have received Christ, who have been influenced by an agitator gospel. These guys came in with Jewish heritage and start trying to convince these Gentiles they need to be circumcised, keep the law of Moses. Paul's fighting against that. He calls that another gospel. He tells them that if they've received Christ, Christ is enough. They don't need to do more things. In fact, if they start doing more things, they make a spiritual declaration that Christ is not profiting them. They spiritually estrange themselves from Christ. And then Paul sort of gives the top of that metaphorical mountain and says, "You've fallen from grace." So he's not talking about people sinning, committing adultery, and embezzling funds. He's talking about believers who go back to these identifying formulas and performances in order to achieve something that they are saying Jesus isn't enough to give them. That would be a fall from grace. So falling from grace is going back to performance, because performance and your performance is beneath the grace of God. You have to fall from the place of grace to go back down to the more elementary level of self-works and performance. And so to fall from grace doesn't mean that grace, that you're out of God's grace. I think we take a metaphor too far. I've been asked this in Q&A. Hey, if falling from grace is going back and doing these other things, does that mean that you can be in grace and then out of grace? Isn't that the equivalent of being now being backslid? So are these people even saved that have accepted Christ, then went back to performance. It's a metaphor. It's just an illustration. He doesn't think there's a real place up in the sky called grace, and that if you get circumcised, you fall out of it. He's using this theological point to say, you've slipped from a superior place to an inferior place. It's superior to trust God for your favor through grace and faith than it is the inferior place of trusting yourself. Though trusting yourself is more tangible, there's more you can do. You can get involved. You can see the circumcision. You can feel the circumcision. You can brag about the circumcision. But it's an inferior place than that which you can't see and touch and feel, which is grace. So you have to go from a superior place to an inferior place in order to start adding all of this junk in which Christ won't profit you anyway, and you'd be estranged from him. No, this doesn't mean that every time a believer goes back to performance, they've lost their salvation. That would be taking this message and running it into a different direction. It would be declaring God rejects you when you go back into performance. No, it's the opposite. God accepts you all the time. You going back into performance is not God. God doesn't reject you for that. That's you rejecting God. So we don't get rejected by the Father because we perform. Our performance tells God we reject Jesus. I don't think we realize what we're seeing, what we're doing in many churches. So you accept Jesus, then we give you a bunch of stuff to do in order to be in God's good graces, in order to be in God's favor. And what we don't realize is that every time we do one of those, we send a message to God that says, I don't really think Jesus is enough. I don't accept the free gift of grace. I'm zealous to go get righteousness on my own. So here's what I'm going to do. So in your day-to-day walk today, don't fall from grace to this inferior position of your own performance, your own works. That's cheap. Why would you want to go backward from this beautiful, wonderful, charis, free favor of God? Beautiful. We do see it again in Hebrews 12. Hebrews 12 is that great race of faith, discipline of God. You're not at Sinai, you are at Zion. Then there's that little catch moment in the middle of 12, sort of that bridge that gets you from the discipline part of the chapter to the mountain part of the chapter, that Esau, the fornicator moment. Verse 14 and 15 of Hebrews 12, pursue peace with all people and holiness without which no one will see the Lord, looking carefully, lest anyone fall short of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up cause trouble, and by this many become defiled. And there's that phrase, fall short of the grace of God. This letter, Hebrews, comes at least a decade or a decade and a half after Galatians. I don't think Hebrews is written by Paul. But there's the same theme, that there's a way to fall short of God's grace. How? And you go into that whole passage there about selling out your... This is why it uses Esau, a guy that sells his eternal inheritance for a bowl of soup. That's a stupid thing to do, right? Well, the author is saying, how many stupid things have we done that is going to ultimately cause a root of bitterness inside of us? It's a symbol of us falling from God's grace because we give up this beautiful grace of God for some temporary satisfaction of thinking we can do this on our own. And I think so many of us have been there. I would recommend a sermon that I posted. It's on our website, Poisoned by the Root of Bitterness, or Poisoned by Bitterness. And we preached it last fall, I believe, maybe early spring. I think it was last fall, from Kansas, Smith Center, Kansas, Poisoned by Bitterness. You can get it for free, and it's on all of our platforms. It'd be a good one to deal with there in Hebrews 12, and it might help complement this from Galatians 5. We'll move on to verse 5 tomorrow. See you then. God bless.